The time's 10 o'clock and you are tuned to WERU-FM 89.9 Blue Hill and streaming online at WERU.org. All About Aging with your host Peg Cruikshank is up next.
Our guests today are Jess Maurer, Executive Director of the Maine Council on Aging, Sue Davis, a retired hospice nurse and a longtime hospice volunteer, who will talk about hospice volunteers, and the group Evensong, who sing for people in hospice. Before we get to our guests, just a few items to share with you about aging. Willie Murphy, an 82-year-old black woman in Rochester, took down an intruder recently. She works out at the local Y and lifts weights. In 2014, she was named Lifter of the Year by the World Powerlifting Federation. Murphy threw a table at the intruder, jumped on him, and poured shampoo all over his head. She thought to herself, if it's my time to go to hell, I'm taking him with me. Willie Murphy of Rochester, who said the intruder picked the wrong house. Now, more seriously, there's disagreement on the effectiveness of a new drug said to slow down the progression of dementia. It's called Advocanubab, and I'm sure we'll be hearing more about it. It's from the Cambridge-based Biogen, and on Thursday, its claims to have slowed down Alzheimer's disease divided scientists who were in the audience. The early tests were failures. They raised the dose, and it seemed to work better. So I'm sure we're going to hear more about that. For the first time in 50 years, more people are dying at home than in the hospital. This presents serious challenges for those caring for seriously ill people at home, and certainly is very relevant to hospice if more people are going to be dying at home. Willie Nelson is worth quoting on Late Life, quote, just that I made it this far, I'm still healthy, I'm still here. The older I get, the better I feel about things. Earlier this month, Willie, who is now 86, announced that he had stopped smoking marijuana. He wants to take better care of his lungs. Now, Jess, good morning. Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes. A little louder, though. You're coming in now. Jess Maurer is the Executive Director of the Maine Council on Aging. Welcome, Jess.
Thank you so much.
Tell us about the background of the program, maybe how it was started and what it does.
Well, it's not a program. It's an organization. So we are a broad, multidisciplinary network of more than 95 organizations, businesses, municipalities, and older adults who are working collaboratively to make sure we can all live healthy, purposeful, engaged, and secure lives in our homes and communities as we age. And we were created back in 2012 when a bunch of folks who were engaged in work related to older adults and aging or maybe healthcare, or economic security or food security, you know, a bunch of different issues, but also cared about issues related to those issues. Older adults came together to have a conversation about the fact that there wasn't one place that was looking at the bigger issues.
Excuse me, Jess, you're breaking up a bit. I don't know if it's a WERU end or your end. We can hear you.
Okay, well, I'm on a landline and I'm talking through the headset. And, you know,
All right, fine. Let's go ahead. 95 groups that are coordinated by the council.
Yes, and we came together to address these bigger issues like transportation and housing and workforce challenges collaboratively because we all care about them in our own silos, but we also need to be working together.
What are some of those groups?
We have as members all of the health systems in Maine, so Maine Health and Northern Light and Central Maine Healthcare, Maine General, We have most of the institutions of higher education who are working on some aspects of this, like St. Joseph's College and University of New England, the Muskie School for Public Service, UMaine Center on Aging, but also a multitude of private businesses, including a very high-tech company that's got a cool artificial intelligence project they're working on called Systems. We have credit unions and banks, the Town and Country Credit Union, and, of course, a whole host of providers who provide services to older people across the continuum of aging. So the Homemaker Program, people who do home care and hospice, people who run assisted living facilities and nursing homes, and really everything in between. All of the agencies on aging and the community action programs are members, and of course, older adults themselves.
And age-friendly cities in Maine, I'm sure, is part of that group.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. We have a few municipalities themselves that are members, as well as age-friendly community initiatives.
What kinds of changes have you seen since 2012, Jess, either in Maine aging or in the work you do?
Well, we've come a long way, and we have a long way to go. Around our direct care workforce issues. I mean, our focus, right, is to make sure that people can live healthy, engaged lives at home. Excuse me. And, you know, some of the challenges to that are things like your home doesn't work for you, or your home is great, but you don't have you can't drive, and there are no public transportation systems. Or you can drive, but you have some problems getting out of bed and maybe engaging in other activities, and so you need a worker to help you get out of bed and maybe get dressed and get going. In all of those ways, we're addressing all of those situations. So, you know, within the direct care workforce challenges, one of the challenges had been that the reimbursement rates for those services hadn't been increased from the state since 1997. And so over the last 6 years, we have systematically pursued legislation that would increase the reimbursement rates for those services, not just for home care, but across the board, because our workforce shortages mean that there are just a limited number of people who can be in these jobs, and you don't want to make a job so much better in one setting than in another that basically everybody who works in assisted living and nursing home care goes to work for home care because they can make more money, or vice versa. And so we've really tried to lift all boats at once. We've also worked very collaboratively with the Department of Transportation providers to increase the number of volunteer transportation initiatives around Maine, to try to get some funding, to get some systemic funding for that, and to connect those programs more to public transit, and to really just highlight the challenges that we have in the rural state. We've created in partnership with many organizations, called a mobility. It's a mobility management focused group called Moving Maine that. We'll be looking at how we increase mobility information to and services to people around Maine so that they can more easily access the transportation services they need.
That's a big challenge, especially in rural Maine, I would think.
Yeah, it's a huge challenge. Yeah, it's not one we've solved, but we're certainly working on.
I think in my area, in Gouldsboro, we depend on our neighbors and our friends and hope they're available when we need to be taken to the doctor or shopping. So some kind of organized transportation, even limited, I suppose, would be a great step forward.
There's no question. And, you know, there's not enough money. We underfund public transportation right now, significantly in comparison to other states. But, you know, there's no question we need to invest more in and make our public transit system more robust, but there's also just no question that we don't have enough money to make sure that everybody who lives down every long rural dirt road in Maine can get a ride from the public transit system. But we do need to create more formal networks of people, as you say, your neighbors, who are willing to take people, you know, from down that dirt road to public transit so that they can then connect to the public system and get anywhere they need to go. So that's the vision, and we are working with DOT to try to make that vision a reality.
I'm guessing that the political change in Augusta would be good for the aging population. I mean, without getting too heavily political here, I was very impressed by the new head of DHHS, who spoke at the summit that your organization really recently sponsored,
the Wisdom Summit.
Yes.
Yeah, we host a Wisdom Summit every year, this year have Commissioner Gene Lambert, Commissioner of the Health and Human Services Department, as our keynote speaker, and she is fantastically impressive and was part of the Obama administration and creating the ICA. She's just very forward-thinking and has done tremendous work so far in her administration to correct wrongs of the last administration. Honestly, for the last 8 years, we've made very little progress outside of working very collaboratively with Maine Housing and the Department of Transportation. The Department of Health and Services was more focused on cutting things and services,
yes,
than it was finding solutions to our growing demand for these services. And we're particularly focused on not just reforming our existing system, but also increasing the services that people can get. In Maine, about a third of older Mainers don't have enough money to meet their basic needs, but don't qualify for any means-tested benefits. And so we need to figure out how those folks are going to get help, because they're going to have to pay out of pocket for care, for transportation, for home repair, for taxes, for health care, and they're not going to be able to do it. It's just right. Not going to have enough money. Right. And so finding solutions for those folks, it's not about creating a handout, but creating some opportunity potentially to pay less. So if you don't qualify for means-tested benefits, but you're, you know, that's a few thousand dollars over, you're still, you know, don't have enough money.
Right.
And
right.
So, you know, can they pay, 50% of what it would cost to deliver that service, you know, and can there be a tiered system, or can there be some other way for lower income people who don't currently qualify for any benefits to gain access, you know, paying for them, but really paying an appropriate share commensurate with their ability to pay.
I'm sure
those are big questions.
Yes, I'm sure the groups you coordinate are all concerned about the cut in the food stamp program, and I understand some of those programs also helped with home heating. So this is a pretty serious setback, I would say, for all Mainers who need food stamps, but especially for the older Mainers.
Well, yeah, and SNAP, you know, which is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. We don't call it food stamps anymore, but that's, you know, what
yeah,
typically call it. So SNAP is uh-huh. a new version. Uh-huh. It's an extraordinarily underutilized program by older adults in Maine and nationally. There's a stigma associated that's always been associated with food stamps. There's a belief, you know, that the system is the same way it is, and a lot of older people don't realize it's just a debit card process now, you know, a card that looks just like everybody else. Nobody knows you're using food stamps. And there's a real belief that if an older person uses that benefit that they are entitled to, that somebody else won't get it, which is also not true. So there's a lot of education that needs to be had around the SNAP program generally, and certainly if you qualify for SNAP, you do automatically qualify for certain low low cost heating assistance as well, fuel assistance. But you're right, cuts to programs like that have a sort of a double whammy. It's both people who sometimes lose a benefit, but it reinforces this idea that it's welfare and that it's bad, and so I shouldn't use it. And so that people who really could benefit, who are going without the necessary nutritious food that they need because they can't afford it, are too proud, and I can't sort of overcome the negative barriers that they need to overcome to access that program. So
yes, and we know older Mainers are especially independent and not at all likely to say, hey, I need help. Some of them do, of course, but there is that Yankee spirit of, I can do it myself.
Yeah, there's Yankee, boy, I'll tell you, there are a lot of people who are doing making do with what they have, and none of us like to ask for help. I like to make sure that I say that. I always ask a question when I'm in a room full of people, and you know, how many people here like to ask for help? And it's the odd person who raises their hand. It's hard actually for all of us to ask for help. In talking to older people here in Maine, what is very clear is we connect ability with aging. So when we talk about what's old and when will we be old, it's often in connection with being able to do for yourself. I'm not going to be old until I can't do things for myself, or if I have to rely on somebody else to do things for me, then I'm old. So it's less about the number, right? It's not that I'm 80 and I'm old, or I'm 90 and I'm old. It's I'm 93 and I'm still cutting my own wood, and I'm still heating with wood, and I'm still plowing my own driveway, and I'm just fine. Right?
Right.
I'm not old.
No.
So it's sort of a frame of reference. It's a frame of mind. Not an age. And so, yeah, it is. It's hard for us to ask for help. And there is that barrier. And then the flip side, I like to talk about that too, is that we live in communities, small, you know, most people live in small communities in Maine, and we have good-hearted neighbors who would do anything for us. That's the part that's funny. And there's this barrier there because I'm not going to go ask Mrs. Jones if she needs a ride or if I can help her because I don't want to, sort of hurt her pride. Right. And so there's this invisible barrier between those, you know, I don't want to ask for help and I don't want to upset somebody, you know, or insult somebody by asking them if they need help. And so the help goes unmet, you know, the needed help goes unmet. So you know, these little community initiatives, the lifelong community initiatives, there are about 130 communities in Maine. We're really supporting all of those efforts, you know, whether it's AARP, Age-Friendly Community Initiative, or the Village Initiative. There's a whole Village to Village, or in naturally recurring retirement villages, or just, you know, sort of non-traditional communities that are a bunch of people coming together to make things better in their town. That's all helping to break down those barriers.
Well, it's certainly a paradox that you've mentioned. The people who have some needs but are too proud to reach out. And this army of wonderful neighbors, willing, many of them, to do what needs to be done, whether it's to haul in the firewood or give someone a ride or pick up books at the library for someone. But it's an opportunity for us to get better educated, isn't it, Jess?
I think it's an opportunity for us to have better, I think it's not even just education, but more conversation.
Yes.
That's what I have found, is that when I'm talking, to a group of older people, we're all really interested in sharing our experiences. And when I've asked people, why is it hard to ask for help and what would help you ask for help, it's a really interesting and simple thing. And the things people say are, it would help if I didn't have to rely on my only neighbor or my only son to provide this transportation, it would be really helpful if I could call a neutral, trusted source, like, and they say, like the town or the church, and I knew that there were volunteers who'd signed up to drive me, and that they had a choice whether they could drive me or not, then I wouldn't feel like I was such a burden to that one person, to that one neighbor, to that one child. And it would feel like that person had a choice of something that they wanted to do. And so it's interesting, you know, this, it's some sort of really basic stuff like creating a network where people realize that other people are making choices and want, you know, to do this. And also making it not so embarrassing to ask for help. So using a trusted source that people are used to engaging with, it doesn't feel like a handout. And also offering people an opportunity to give back.
Yes.
You know, a lot of programs in Maine now, these sort of volunteer programs that are spurring, you know, sort of coming up are, you know, suggest that people don't pay, but pay it forward. Do something else for somebody else. I'm doing this for you. You do something else for someone. And that seems to really work.
That's a good suggestion for a technique or a program that would make people feel more at ease about asking the neighbors, knowing that they have some other choices. And maybe the volunteers at the city center are their neighbors after all. So in small towns, that might work. About the Aging Wisdom Summit, again, Jess, I was a member, someone else there that made an impression on me was Shirley Weaver from Kennebunk, who had started a support group for older veterans. I thought that was so such a good idea, because the vets would have so much in common that they might not have with other people, and they could be she helps them, doesn't she, find services that could help them, put in touch with the vast network of services out there.
Yeah, that's called the Vet to Vet program. And it's, you know, one of the things we have found over and over again, and it's funny how we all think we know what's right and what's best. And I hear all the time, what about an intergenerational program? We need intergenerational that. The reality is that peer-based interventions work really, really well. Older adults teaching older adults how to use technology is actually slower and less threatening, and yet we think, oh, well, young people understand technology; they can be, you know, we'll put them together and they'll teach older people how to use it. But they may not teach it in the same way that somebody who is older, who's had to learn it, can be able to, you know, sort of pass it on to in a way that's far less. Matter of fact, and you know, just get it together. I don't understand why you're not figuring this out, you know, kind of thing. And that's the same sort of thing with this vet program, right? It's a peer-based program. It doesn't really matter whether it's a young vet or an older vet engaged with a really older vet who may need help navigating a system, or just might need to have a friendly visitor talk, you know, a week with them. It is a way of creating, you know, they have a shared experience, values, you know, obviously around military experience and shared language even. And so it makes it easier. It breaks down a barrier. And so that's really the key here, is to find multiple ways to break down barriers and to help people get the help they need in ways that they can accept it.
Maybe the intergenerational part would be conversations rather than having some young person try to teach an older person something about tech. You know, Maggie Kuhn, who founded the Grey Panthers some years ago, I think there are still a few chapters around. Intergenerational was her pitch, and she rented rooms to young college students. And in an interview I heard with her, she made it clear that she had young lovers sometimes who lived with her, which was a useful image to put out there of the aging female. But anyway, I can see your point that peer-to-peer training is going to be much more effective than having a young person try to teach an older person something about tech. For me, for example, it would have to be at such a basic level that the 18-year-old volunteer could hardly conceptualize what that meant. Anything else about the Wisdom Summit? It happens every year, right?
It does. I was going to say, you know, it's interesting. You were talking about intergenerational conversations, and one of the other breakout sessions we hosted at the Wisdom Summit was on ageism, and it's ageism is is negative stereotypes based on age that is often fueled by what we call implicit bias, and so it's my own internal beliefs about an older person or a younger person. And I offer that because it's very interesting that ageism and aging just generally is, in fact, a really great place to be able to talk about. And I love talking to younger people about it because I can say, you know, I'm talking about aging, but what are your stereotypes about old people? Have them. And you know what? They have them about you. And what are the stereotypes they have about you? And are any of those things, you know, so it does create this terrific common ground. Where, you know, we can all get to the place where if you've met one young person or you met one old person, you met one young person, one old person, right?
What are some of the stereotypes
about them? Pardon me?
Just what are some of the stereotypes that come up in that conversation that you're familiar with?
Well, I mean, well, we know about, you know, older people. As a matter of fact, we just talked about, a stereotype that older people are not tech savvy.
Yeah, yeah.
And they drive slow, and they can't lift heavy things, and they have memory problems. And, the list goes on
right.
and on and on.
Right.
And, you know, the same for young people, right? They're self-absorbed. They only pay attention to technology. They don't know how to have conversations. They're not reliable. They don't have a work ethic. I mean, they're loud. They're unpredictable. They drive like crazy. I mean, right? We think older people drive really slow, and young people drive really crazily, and both of those things are true, by the way.
Statistically, though, older people do have fewer accidents than people under 25.
Yeah, but you know, you go to an assisted living facility with 90-year-olds who are driving, and you'll see both. Just
That's
like
good.
I'm saying, it's all over the place. We have these belief systems. You're right. I mean, there's data out there that would
right.
suggest that, you know, men are much more reckless when they're driving than older people. And still, we have, you know, other statistics that would suggest that some older people should hang up skis sooner than others.
Oh, well, that's very true. But you'll be pleased to hear that the woman who talked about ageism at the Wisdom Summit, Mary Lou Cifoli, is going to be on this program in January talking about ageism, age stereotypes. She's done a lot of investigation historically about this prejudice, and so we look forward to having that ripple effect from the Wisdom Summit, and that one of the people you chose will also be on All About Aging.
Yeah, Mary Lou is terrific. She's
good.
She's been really great.
You've been listening to All About Aging on WERU. This is your host, Peg Cruikshank. We've been talking with Jess Maurer about the Maine Council on Aging. And now we're going to turn over to hospice and evensong. And Jess, if you have comments or questions, please join us. I know you have a meeting this morning, but we'd welcome anything that you have to say. Sue?
Good morning. My name is Sue Davis. I have a background as a hospice and home care nurse and happily retired at this point, but continuing with my volunteer service with a wonderful organization that I have been affiliated with since the early 80s, and that is Hospice Volunteers of Hancock County. This organization was founded in 1980. At the time that it was founded, there was a network of independent volunteer hospice organizations in Maine, and the Hancock County Hospice Volunteers was part of that. Organization provided trained volunteers to be supportive companions, responsive to non-medical and often unvoiced needs of families who were caring for loved ones at home, or actually in nursing homes also. They predated the development of and provision of medical hospice in Maine by about 8 to 10, 8 or 9 years. I'd like to quote the current mission statement of Hospice Volunteers of Hancock County. The statement says that they seek to enhance the lives of those experiencing life-limiting illness and grief due to loss by providing quality, cost-free, compassionate support and comfort. And Hospice Volunteers of Hancock County, which has a house, at 14 Mackenzie Ave in Ellsworth, has outreach teams. That's been their structure of volunteers throughout Hancock County, including in Ellsworth, in Bucksport, in the Bar Harbor area, and in down east in the Gouldsboro area. One thing that is allowed this program to develop is a wonderful support from these communities. Hospice volunteers financially support primarily comes from donations by the public and the communities they serve. One of the developments from the first programs offered by Hospice Volunteers, which was primarily for patient care volunteers, is this Evensong Singers, and you're going to hear more from them, but I'm going to ask their leader to tell you a little bit about the development of that program.
That's great. Before we do that, though, could I ask you a couple questions about
Sure.
Hospice of Hancock County, about how many people are in this program?
In terms of
volunteers?
Volunteers, I'm not sure I can give you an exact number, but there is a patient care program, which I think has probably about 50 volunteers. There's a bereavement program, which may have a comparable number. There are the Evensong Singers, which they'll tell you how much, how many
right.
that they have. Mm-hmm. And then there is a really dedicated group of office volunteers that help to keep the organization mm-hmm. running smoothly. Initially, when it was founded, there was no hired people, then there was one person, and we now have a staff in the office of 4, and then a very dedicated group of office volunteers who show up and help keep things going.
That's good. Am I right in thinking hospice volunteers would come in all ages?
I do not believe that we have volunteers below the age of 18. I may be wrong on that, but I don't think so.
Well, that's still good, though, as far as the range of ages, and then middle-aged and older people as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Well, thank you about presenting that material. Now we'll turn to Cookie and hear about background of Evensong.
Hi, I'm Cookie Horner, and I'll tell you a little bit about how Evensong got started here. We are about to start our 13th year of singing together, and this began when we heard about a program that was started by the Hallowell Singers in Brattleboro, Vermont, and they offered a workshop. We actually had seen a video where they were singing, and then they offered a workshop in Maine on how to get started with a hospice singing group, and several of us jumped right on that and went to it and said, we're going to do this, and so we came back, and we got together a group which eventually reached about 20 in we initially started singing for all of Hancock County and realized how big it was when some days we had to go and spend an entire Saturday going from one end of the county to the other. And so when that happened, we said to the Blue Hill Peninsula, you need to get a group going there too. So we now have Evensong East, which does the eastern part of Hancock County, and Evensong West, which does the Blue Hill side. And sometimes we sing together. And so I guess all together there are probably, I would say, 35 singers. And so I think we'll sing something first, and then maybe we can talk a little more.
That sounds good. First, a question about the name, though. It's a beautiful name. Seems to have more than one meaning.
Yeah, well, we tossed it around, and Evensong is a service in the afternoon or early evening. And you might say that that sort of fits with the evening of life.
Yes.
And it just.
Yes. And putting song in there, too, is, mm-hmm. is very good.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we can hear some examples.
So we're going to start with a very familiar tune that we often begin a sing with. It's sort of upbeat, which is a good way to begin any sing. And there are five of us here today, so we'll see how we do.
Shall we gather at the river, where bright angel feet have trod, with its crystal tide forever flowing by the throne of God? Yes, we'll gather at the river, the beautiful river. Gather with the saints at the river that flows by the throne of God. On the margin of the river, washing up its silver spray, we will walk and worship ever all the happy golden days. Yes, we'll gather at the river, the beautiful river. Gather with the saints at the river that flows by the throne of God. Ere we reach the shining river, lay we every burden down. Grace our spirits will deliver and provide a robe and crown. Yes, we'll gather at the river, the beautiful river. Gather with the saints at the river that flows by the throne of God. Soon we'll reach the shining river, soon our pilgrimage will cease, soon our happy hearts will quiver with the melody of peace. Yes, we'll gather at the river, the the beautiful river. Gather with the saints at the river that flows by the throne of God. That flows by the throne of God.
That was wonderful. You've just heard Evensong singing. Can you tell us who the individual members are here today, Cookie?
Yeah, sure. On my left here is Jerry Gregerson, who sings alto, and on my right is Marcy Correa, who's another soprano, and across the table is my husband, Bill Horner, who's a bass, and our excellent tenor, Pat Welsh.
Thanks very much. Sue?
I'd just like to say that I've been present in my former occupation as a hospice nurse when Evensong has been at the bedside of a family that is caring for their loved one at home, as well as coming into a nursing home and singing when the residents and staff would gather around. And it is such a moving experience and so appreciated. I just think it's been such a great addition to the work of hospice volunteers and to our communities. And yes, they're really good.
That's a wonderful tribute. I saw a video once, I think, that said, correct me if I'm wrong, that if a dying person requests a song that you don't know, you learn it. Is that true?
We try.
You try.
We say that we don't take requests, but we actually do. We don't always do a great job of it, but probably our funniest request was my friend the witch doctor.
And we learned it.
And we learned it for a 95-year-old woman, and it just made her day.
Well, I thought the request came from the witch doctor. No, it was the song, the witch doctor. Good.
We've also sung Christmas carols in July.
Because that's what the person wanted.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Can we hear another?
Sure. So I was just going to say that we go with the size group to a sing that is appropriate for the size of the house or the size of the room, or you know, if we sing in a hospital for someone at the end of life, we usually go with a smaller group. So the smallest would be four, but we have also gone with, you know, almost everybody, and sometimes that's appropriate.
And there must be an enrichment for all of you from being at bedsides. Could anyone comment on that?
Yeah, for sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, this is kind of a ministry.
Yes.
And I would say that as much as we might bring to the families, they give a tremendous gift back to us. I'll just say, too, I'm a retired physician, and there are some really interesting research now in terms of brain function that is based not on purely anatomy, but on areas of the brain that receive certain signals. And music is totally different in its reception in the brain than, say, speech, as you're hearing now. And we not infrequently have the situation where a patient will be virtually comatose or at least minimally responsive and will sing one of these songs, and all of a sudden they start mouthing the words and sometimes literally wake up. And, of course, the family just, well, anyway, you can imagine what that would be like.
Yes.
So, anyway, that's one of my great takeaways.
That must be a powerful experience. I've already decided I would like Evensong when the time comes. I'm not in a great hurry to.
Well, that reminds me that anybody can request an Evensong sing. And so the way that anybody in our communities can request it is to call Hospice Volunteers of Hancock County, and then they would make the referral. And
have we got a number for
that? Yeah. We do.
Hospice Volunteers of Hancock County.
667-2531.
And we also do sing for people who are not actually in hospice. It just depends.
I see.
You know, we go to the hospital sometimes. The hospitals will request us to come, and we do sing in the nursing homes, and we might have, you know, be asked to sing for one patient, but it usually ends up to be an entire floor of patients. So we often sing songs in other languages, and the value of that is that when people are sick and old, that sometimes the words are too much of a burden for them, and so if they don't know what the words mean, they tend to just close their eyes and hear the music. So we're going to do one of those now.
Thank you.
It's called Ishe Olawa.
Ishe Olawa, Kole Bajeo, Ishe Olawa, Kole.
Thank you. What a beautiful song. What language is that?
That is...
Sounds like an African...
From Nigeria.
From Nigeria, mm-hmm. Yes. Are there certain songs that you get requested very frequently?
Hands down, Amazing Grace.
Amazing Grace. Yeah. Well, that's not surprising.
And we just went to a sing, and we sang Christmas carols and hymns, and literally when we sang the first three notes of Amazing Grace, the patient's face just lit up with this radiant smile, and it touches us all when that happens.
It's wonderful to have a universal response like that, isn't it? A song that appeals to so many people. I'm interested in healthy aging. And music's role in healthy aging is particularly interesting to me because I think the research maybe hasn't all... We need more research on the connections, but I'm fascinated by your point that music comes from a different part of our brain. Music and speech are not from the same places in the brain. And I think those of you in Evensong, although this isn't your motive, are doing a great thing for your own healthy aging because all this music, all this sound... is enlivening and enriching, and maybe in 5 years there'll be a research project where we could pin that down a little more. We have time for another song if you can sing.
Sure. This is a song that we in Evensong love very much, and it's just sort of it's a perfect song for someone very near to the end of life, and we have also sung it at memorial services. And this is by Pete Seeger.
To my old brown earth and to my old blue sky, last few molecules of to cry. Guard well our human chain. Watch well you keep it strong. As long as sun will shine. And this our home, keep pure and sweet and green. For now I'm yours, and you are also mine.
Thank you for that beautiful song. Another time on this program, we had Pete Seeger song called My Get Up and Go, Got Up and Went. So that gives a range of Pete Seeger. You mentioned you sing at memorial services.
We do. We never thought of that when we started. It was sort of unexpected, but it makes a lot of sense. Hospice work is it's a very intimate thing. And it's not unlike attending childbirth. It's a beginning and an end, and and you become very close with, even on a single sing, sometimes we become very close with the families, and they really feel connected to us. And both patients and families have asked if we would sing at their services, and we do.
After you've sung for the dying person,
yes,
that's certainly a tribute to your work, and your voices are beautiful, I must say. I love the harmonies and the songs.
Well, we do rehearse twice a month, and we have for all these weeks. And it's really important not just to like singing, but it's important to be good.
To be good at it, yes. I'm sure that's true, and in such a small group, it would be pretty clear if someone were not really good at it. I think we have a few minutes left. Could we go back to your first song and just have part of it if I need to stop by the hour?
Well, we have one more.
Oh, you have one more? Oh, sure. Sorry. I thought...
No, well...
Oh, one more. No, sing your one more, please.
Let the life.
This is another song that is a favorite of some of our patients, and it's one that we also would often sing at a memorial service.
Let the life I've lived speak for me. for me. Let the work I've done speak for me. When I come to the end of this road and I lay
for that beautiful song. And in your early one, the phrase, our human chain, isn't that what we need to hang on to in these troubled times? You've been listening to All About Aging with your host, Peg Cruikshank. Thanks to our guests, Evensong, Sue Davis, and Jess Maurer of the Maine Coalition on Aging. And thanks to our engineer, Amy Brown.